Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. If you ever donated blood, you know that there's a form to fill out beforehand to determine if you're eligible. And for nearly 40 years, it took into consideration gender and sexual orientation. That individual donor assessment that blood centers have to follow comes from the Food and Drug Administration. The guidelines began with a lifetime ban back in 1985 for men who have sex with men. And then in the decades since, the FDA scaled back, allowing for gay and bisexual men to donate blood as long as they abstain from sex. All of that is now a thing of the past. Now everyone is screened equally, regardless of gender and sexual orientation. Vitalant is one of the largest blood centers in the country, with many locations here in Northern California. The nonprofit was also the lead research organization behind the FDA's change. Dr. Chris Gressens is the senior chief medical officer for Vitalant and joins us with more on the changes and what the response has been so far. Good morning, Dr. Gressens.
Good morning, Ms. Gonzalez, and thank you for allowing me to share with you and your audience a little bit about what's going on.
Yeah, it's been a few months since you last joined us. You joined us on Insight back in May, and that was following the FDA's announcement of these new blood donation eligibility guidelines. Remind us why the FDA took gender and sexual orientation into consideration when it came to people who wanted to donate blood.
Sure. So once upon a time, as you correctly shared, going back 40 years, we had to paint, unfortunately, with a very broad brush because we didn't have the tools now at our disposal for ensuring the continued safety of the blood supply. Many, many thousands of people, including 10 out of 20,000 people with hemophilia A, were infected from HIV. And most of those infections admittedly did occur in association with blood coming from men who had had sex with other men. So the challenge was trying to do this fairly at a time when we didn't have the ideal tools. And as a result, we painted with that very broad brush 40 years ago. We've since pulled back using a narrower and narrower brush, to the point where, as of just last month early, we're using a 3-month deferral from time of last male-to-male sexual contact as our deferral criterion. However, we didn't believe that was good enough. We believe we have better tools at our disposal now, and that's why we've done just what you've said and taken away that last, what we believe was inappropriate and unfair mandate. And I can share with you a little bit more about what we're doing now as you'd like.
Yeah, I mean, given that Vitalant officially moved forward with these new guidelines late last month, it's just been a couple weeks. Walk us through what's different.
Thank you. So nowadays, rather than asking about a history of male-to-male sexual contact, instead we talk about risk factors related to sexual contact in general, irrespective of somebody's sexual background. So for instance, we ask if someone has had any new partners, new sexual partners in the last 3 months, or more than one sexual partner. That's getting at where the risk really resides. And it makes sense. People who have had recent new sexual partners are at risk for new exposures if the other partner has a disease. And people who have multiple sexual partners, just by pure logic as well as the facts that we found, are at greater risk as well. Hmm. So that alone, though, isn't enough to defer the donor. In other words, if somebody says, yes, I had a new sexual partner 2 months ago, we then ask a follow-up question. And that specifically is, did that sexual contact involve anal sex? And the reason for that is we know from a pure biologic, physiologic, mechanical perspective that HIV is more easily transmitted through anal sex. So if the two converge, if somebody says, yeah, I have a new sexual partner in the last 3 months or more than one sexual partner, and it involved anal sex, that's the only time we would defer. And that's a 3-month deferral from last contact. I'm glad to speak further to that, but that's the nutshell version.
You know, given that, you know, there are other countries that have implemented this change ahead of the United States. Some include Canada and the United Kingdom. What was there to learn from them?
Thanks for asking. This was one of those cases where we're not at the top of the or the front of the wave, if you will. We allowed other colleagues elsewhere to learn from their experiences and share with us. And what we've seen so far is there does not seem to be any increased risk to the safety of the blood supply. That doesn't surprise us, but still, sometimes, no matter how good the research you do, you find out afterwards that there are uncontrollable variables that lead to other results. So we're very pleased that post-change surveillance shows no significant changes in safety, whether in several Western European countries or Canada. We, however, also will continue to monitor closely along with FDA just to make sure the same holds true in the U.S. The other question becomes, how many more blood donations do we get from that change? And we are hopeful, based upon what we're seeing in other countries, small, low single-digit incremental increases. We're hopeful that we'll have similar improvement. You might say, well, what does a single-digit mean? Well, if you're just barely treading water in meeting the transfusion needs of your patients, 1% more blood can be everything. So we're hopeful that as we become more inclusive, more welcoming, that one benefit among several, the major benefit is we'll be able to help more patients.
Yeah, people may be surprised to know, and this is on your website, that of those who are eligible to donate blood, I mean, currently only about 3% donate blood. So, and I know that this has only been a couple weeks since you've rolled out these changes, but what has been the response been thus far in the last 2 to 3 weeks?
Thus far, Vicki, it's been more anecdotal in that if I might share with you a couple of discussions I've had with friends, in this case, two married couples, male-male married couples, who have indicated to me how delighted they are that now they'll finally be able to donate. That was a good feeling. That was a feeling of warmth, knowing that people whom I've known for a couple of decades would make wonderful donors finally can come into the tent and join us. And both of them have scheduled, one partner of each of those marriages has scheduled donations. We don't know yet just how many more new donors are going to come in as a result of this. In a few months, though, we can provide you an update.
Is there going to be more outreach or an awareness campaign? Because although these changes have taken place, it doesn't mean that people know that, especially since there have been restrictions for nearly 40 years.
Well, absolutely. We don't want to whisper on a windy day here. We want to shout this out, and we really are trying to do that, but I think there's more we can do, in particular in collaboration with LGBT community leadership. So we certainly are making some inroads there. Quite frankly, I think there's more we can do, and my senior team executives are working on just that.
What should transgender, non-binary, or transitioning individuals, what should they expect when filling out the form to donate blood with Vitalant?
Yeah, thanks for asking. Number one, I want to say that we welcome people from all of those groups, all those populations of fellow human beings. It is just a little bit more complicated, and here's why. We also need to take into account safety considerations regarding how much blood we remove, because some of our considerations when we calculate, for instance, blood volumes are still predicated on male versus female statistics. I believe in the next 5 to 10 years, as we look at patients and by extension blood donors, we'll subdivide into more than just those binary two categories. But for safety reasons, if a male to female transitioned person were to donate, that blood volume calculation would be slightly different than the converse if a female to male donor were to come in. So we do have to account for that, and we apologize for some of the extra questions, usually only an extra minute or two this will entail. But for the time being, it's the best we can thread our way through, making sure we are inclusive, yet at the same time we don't put our donors at risk. Does that start to answer your question,
Yeah,
Vicki?
it seems like there still are more questions, which leads me to my final question, because Vitalant was instrumental in the research that led to the FDA updating its guidelines. What are the next steps for research in this area?
Yeah, well, we'll do not unlike when any new medication comes out and there's what's known as post-marketing surveillance. We're going to do the same. This isn't a medication, but it's a major change. So we're going to look at two major issues. Number one, does the safety of the blood supply remain constant, or ideally even better? But certainly we want to make sure that this is at least a zero-sum game as far as safety. And then number two, we do want to see what impact this has on increased donations, because again, every little bit helps. So over the next months to few years, we'll know more.
Dr. Gressens, thank you for the time.
Thank you so much, Vicki. And if I could just encourage, final comment, when you mention only 3% of adults donate, that contrasts to 62% or thereabouts of adults actually being able to donate. If we could bump that 3% up to 4%, anyone who's listening who might be interested in donating, please do go to vitalant.org, and we'd be happy to let you know if you can join the gang. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Chris Gressens is the Senior Chief Medical Officer for Vitalant, one of the largest blood donation centers, which has just implemented the FDA's updated guidance, opening eligibility to more gay and bisexual men to donate blood. For the first time in 40 years, blood donor eligibility is determined regardless of gender or sexual orientation. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.